the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals, and recording episode 638, another off-season show with my co-host, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And we have a little bit of movement, Super Bowl week. The Cardinals are not involved in the Super Bowl, although...
Wait, what?
You know, we can talk about that. You look at it. We'll talk about this on Thursday, I think, but... There is a trio, DJ Humphreys, Hollywood Brown, and DeAndre Hopkins. That was supposed to be a Super Bowl team for the Cardinals. That they, like, those were supposed to be key guys for a Super Bowl team for the Cardinals if things had gone according to plan. And now they're on the Chiefs, of course.
Well, and I don't know if you've seen it because I'm sure you haven't looked at too many props yet. No, I don't have a gambling problem. You have a gambling problem. But DeAndre's over under for yards, 13.5, guess. So
he's loving playing for the Chiefs. He barely plays.
Yeah, he's loving playing because he's actually winning. He's figured out, like, oh crap, not winning when you're this old it sucks. So yeah,
he said when he was with the Titans, like he talked about it this week, is that he was in the dumps. He was not enjoying playing football. He lost love for the game. I'm like, playing for the Titans will do that. You know, losing games and having Will Levis throw you the ball, I guess did that. And then going to the Chiefs, it sort of revitalized him. And then he made the comment today that, like, someone asked him, like, you get all sorts of weird stuff asked in Super Bowl week. So what's his favorite catch? His favorite catch of his career is not the Hail Mary. It was his first touchdown with the Chiefs. So when he had the first of two touchdown catches against Tampa Bay, and I remember watching that because I was watching that game, and you could tell it was something a little extra for him. Like he almost found a new spot in his career.
A relief. But there's also that meme going around on X right now that I recently discovered recency bias, and it's my favorite thing. Like that describes to a T what DeAndre Hopkins is talking about right
100%. Now. 100%. He's like, I'm all Chiefs. I'm all Chiefs right now.
Well, and that's fine. I mean, honestly, he should be. I mean, they've made his career, end of his career. You know, obviously his career itself was fantastic, but they've made the end of his career have some relevancy after, you know, the unfortunate ending in Arizona and then kind of wasting away in Tennessee. Which, like you said, unfortunately, go to Tennessee right now. And that's been a joke for ages that, you know, if you're an old receiver in Tennessee, you know, or when you're a great all pro receiver, you end your career in Tennessee, right? Like, cause Julio did that. I can't remember the other guy. That's the big meme on that, but yeah, like that's what happens there all the time. And now you have, you know, this situation where the Cardinals have some guys that were part of them, and then DJ Humphreys. I mean, obviously, I think DJ we all feel happy for, right? Like, good for DJ. He's going to have his work cut out for him. Ooh, boy.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough, like, though, like, I like he's not even playing right now because they moved Joe Tooney over to left tackle and they're riding with that right now. So
that's because Joe Tooney just wins Super Bowls. So, you know, there's really, really no reason not to at this juncture.
Right. So it'll be fun to see. It'll be fun to see how that goes. We'll talk about the Super Bowl later this week. But, you know, we talked a little bit about coaching changes in our last show last week. We only did the one show. And there's been more. So the Cardinals have lost four assistants. One was let go, Derek LeBlanc. One, Sam Siefkis, he took a defensive coordinator job at Virginia Tech.
Hey, real quick, Justin, on LeBlanc, do we consider him being let go or just his contract not renewed? I know they're kind of similar, but like
on from him. Yeah. It's like,
Right. They didn't. So it's hard to explain.
Technically, because like Seth, you pointed this out last week, assistant contracts usually are 2 seasons. And that's why, like, particularly last offseason, there was no movement of Cardinals assistants. This year, there's been a lot of movement. Although it looks like that Izzy Wolfork, he either had a 3-year contract, which is possible because they had to lure him away from Washington, or he already had re-upped at some point during the season. Because that was the one report, is that the Brett Bears had requested an interview with him. And if you notice, Clayton Adams ends up being, he was hired by the Dallas Cowboys and Brian Schottenheimer to be Dallas's offensive coordinator. So they lose him. Derek LeBlanc was let leave. And then we learned on Tuesday that, Liam Cohen for the Jacksonville Jaguars has snagged Spencer Whipple, who is the passing game specialist for the Cardinals, as their quarterback's coach. So Whipple, who had been with the team for years, he'd been with the team for 2 years with Gannon, and then 4 years with under Cliff Kingsbury. And so 4 assistants gone. 3 of them have since been replaced. Before we get into that, because we didn't really talk about, what was it last week? We only talked about Sivkus and LeBlanc, right? What's the impact of losing a guy like Clayton Adams?
You know, I think we'll see, and I know that's an easy answer right now. Here's what I'll say about the replacement, and we'll talk about him shortly, is like, everything you hear is how great of a teacher and coach he is in terms of getting guys ready for the position. So with what Adams did to help this offensive line, especially in the run game, with how good he was in designing run game and helping, or whatever his input was with Drew Petzing, that will be missed. However, I'm very excited with what and who they brought in, just because that's a guy that has a background as a great teacher and has learned under one of the masters of the spread run game in Chip Kelly, and I think he'll bring something unique and different, and it should be an interesting transition, and let's hope we're not lamenting the loss of Clayton Adams, but you know, at the same time, you have to be excited that 3 of the young Cardinals coaches and the position coaches, not even coordinators, right, were highly thought of and were able to go get new jobs, 2 of which coordinators, obviously one in college, but an offensive coordinator position, probably more, would you not agree, like a run game coordinator position, even though he has the offensive coordinator title. And then, you know, like you said, with Spencer Whipple's departure, the quarterback coach, that's, honestly, that's the one I'm most interested to kind of follow along with, because he's got some work to do, unfortunately, right? Like,
yeah,
Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars have been really struggling to get back to where they were supposed to be. So we'll see how that works out, and then hopefully Spencer Whipple is part of that solution.
Well, the thing with Adams, what I see it, Brian Schottenheimer, we know he's going to be calling plays. Jerry Jones said that. So basically, yeah, Adams becomes Schottenheimer's equivalent to what Harold Goodwin was for Bruce Arians, who is an important piece of the run game without having a run game like specialist or run game coordinator title. and he'll probably help coach the offensive line. That's exactly what Goodwin did. When Sean Coogler was here, he had a very important role in the run game when the Cardinals didn't have an offensive coordinator. He was the offensive line coach and also was, but he was critical to that. And so it'll be interesting to see how things go. But, you know, as I've said many times, like you can't keep your assistants forever unless you have, like, the only way you keep your assistants is if you're replacing your coordinators and you promote your assistants. So this is just a natural thing that's happening. And they continue to go young. So they bring in Justin Fry from Ohio State. He coached Paris Johnson. And, you know, already, I mean, doesn't it feel like that we can probably lock in one Ohio State offensive lineman at some point during the draft?
Right. And that's the biggest thing. So it makes you wonder, one, how quickly they moved on from Adams, right? And not that they moved on, but how quickly they were able to go find a replacement for Adams. And two, to get somebody the stature of Justin Fry was impressive. Not gonna lie, you and I, you know, a text off the grid like we normally do, and we were kind of like, let's see what kind of pull Gannon has. And so to go get a guy that's as respected as Fry, that has done such an amazing job in coaching up talent as Fry, I don't think people realize how banged up the Ohio State offensive line was during their college football playoff run.
They lost Josh Simmons. They lost Seth McLaughlin, their two best linemen. Donovan Jackson, who moved over to left tackle, was a guard. And one, honestly, when we talk draft stuff, Jackson is a guy that I'm super interested in because he played guard at a really high level. And in terms of what he was willing to do, moving to tackle and playing poorly, a la Isaiah Adams last year, that can really hurt you. Like when you're looking at the draft, because they look at the last year of the tape and you're struggling at tackle. And then Jackson moved over to left tackle. And guess what? He played pretty well after some early struggles, which is a testament to him and also to the coaching of Fry, because you took a left guard who wasn't really a tackle and you showed and you had a national championship team with that guy anchoring the offensive line.
Yeah, and he just, I mean, that's the thing is Justin Higdon, who you guys all know, huge Ohio State fan, and then a couple other guys that I talked to that are Ohio State fans, the theme was simple, like a fantastic coach, like upper tier, upper echelon level coach, terrible recruiter. And so you take
that. Perfect. It's perfect. Right. You don't have to recruit here.
Right. Right. So, well, I mean, maybe free agents, but that'll work itself out. Right. So that'll be how we go through it. But I'm excited about Fry. I wish nothing but the best for Clayton Adams. And I hope he's able to continue to grow.
Yeah. They replace Derek LeBlanc with Winston De Latabudier. Yes, very long last name, and I think I'm getting used to spelling it. Was the defensive coach at Minnesota. A very interesting kid. He's 27 years old. And you're like, where does they keep getting younger with their thing? But this one now makes sense, thanks to a little bit of research by my colleague, Howard Balzer, over at Cards Wire. He and Rallis were teammates at the University of Minnesota. In Rallis's last two seasons, because he played through 2016, De Latabudier, he was a freshman in 2015 and a redshirt freshman and played in 2016. So the two have connections. And when you see, like when we talked about the moving on from LeBlanc, not renewing his contract or whatever the decision was, whether it was philosophical, whether it was performance related, or whether it was a case where Gannon / Rallis had someone else in mind who was available. Perhaps this was something that Rallis had in his mind. Like he knew this guy. and believed that he would be a good coach, was paying attention to what he did over at Minnesota. That's where they went to school. That's where Dilada Boudier, I'm going to have the hardest time with that name, was coaching the defensive line. And now he was promoted to the assistant coach. So he's the defensive line coach. He was a defensive quality control coach, then defensive line coach, and then a promoted to assistant head coach in 2024. And now he is a position coach in the NFL and will be younger than the two of their, you know, statesmen on the team in Bilal Nichols and Justin Jones. So I'm interested in seeing how that dynamic goes. And then the one that we got in the last couple of days, the kind of the Cowboys, you know, stole Clayton Adams from the Cardinals. The Cardinals did the same thing to them as Christian Garcia, their assistant defensive backs coach, now joins the Cardinals to be their inside linebackers coach. And while the Garcia didn't have any connection per se to Nick Rawlins because he was in Dallas, and before that he was on Ron Rivera's staff in Washington. Who did Garcia work under last year? None other than Mike Zimmer, their defensive coordinator. And Gannon and Rawlins are heavily connected to Mike Zimmer. And so they bring Garcia in to be their he replaces Sefkis to coach the linebackers. And something you pointed out is that, you know, he's coaching linebackers, but he has a defensive back and a background, and something that the linebackers this past season had a little bit of struggles with was in coverage. And perhaps he can add to that. So I don't know anything about him. He doesn't have a long resume, but it's another case where this staff, like when they brought Kingsbury over, they had this mix of veteran and young. This staff is so young. It is. And whenever with Monty Austin, for first time general manager, you know, Gannon, first time head coach, both coordinators, first time head, coordinators, you go with the quarterback's coach, Izzy Wolfert, which is a first-time position coach. You go up and down the staff, and it was all their first time in that. You have Jeff Rogers, who's still an assistant head coach and doing his thing on special teams. But it's interesting the kind of the dynamic nature that the Cardinals coaches have. They're getting guys promoted. Their guys are getting promoted. That's always a great sign. And two, you're continuing to bring in guys that you feel confident in, and you don't have to go to older guys. He's like, they've got guys prepared for it. And from there was one report that Adams, had he not, the Cardinals were prepared to lose him. They didn't want to lose him, but he was going to go because it looks like if he didn't get the job in Dallas, that he would have been the favorite to be the offensive coordinator in New Orleans once Kellen Moore is officially named head coach of the Saints after the Super Bowl.
That would have been a disaster, so I'm glad he didn't go there. I mean, I'm sure he would have done great, but there's that New Orleans job's probably the worst one, unfortunately. It's interesting with the new D-line coach, only 27, right? So you have Rallis, who's young. You have we'll just call him WD, is young.
And Winston.
Yeah, Winston's young. Coach Winston, be a little respectful. And that'll be an interesting pairing. He got a lot out of the line this year at Minnesota, which is good to see. Ja Joyner and Danny Strigow are two guys that went and got into the Senior Bowl, which is not something that you see a lot, right, for Minnesota defensive linemen. So they improved their sack numbers. I think 22, I saw it was like they were at in 22. I think they had 22 sacks. They had 28 last year, and then I think they were at 30 this year. So like, improvement, right? Like that's the name of the game. You saw these guys. So Ja Joyner under Coach Winston, he had 7.5 sacks last year, 4.5 sacks this year. You know, it's interesting and will be interesting to see how this develops, because getting these young guys in, and we talked about this, right? Like kind of having ready-made replacements. And that's been our question with if and when Drew Petzing goes, right? Who's the heir apparent? And it seemed like Clayton Adams would be naturally the guy, but obviously now he's gone. We're not sure. So that'll be interesting.
I would guess that would be Izzy Wolfork probably at this point, or maybe Drew Terrell. Maybe Drew Terrell might be.
So it'll be interesting to watch and see how that develops. But yeah, I mean, you bring in Coach Winston, you bring in Coach Garcia, young guys. Garcia's a little bit older, obviously, but not much. You bring in young guys to fill those positions and continue to work towards having a really good staff, like we have seen with the Niners, like we've seen with the Rams, you know, and how they just kind of have in-house guys ready to go to take the next coordinator position. And that's ultimately the goal, because what does that tell you, Jess? Well, your team's good, right? Like, yeah. We want the guys that are coaching that team because they're good. And, you know, we've had that one time, and Arians left, and since then it's not happened anymore. So
yeah, pretty much.
Hopefully the natural progression of things for this staff and everybody.
Coming up next on the Rise of Syria podcast, the Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. Now we're going to dive into the draft stuff. We had the Senior Bowl. Let's look at some offensive prospects who stood out in the Senior Bowl that we should know. That's coming up next on Rise of Syria. We're back on the Rise of Syria podcast, the Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. After talking about our coaches stuff, we're going to talk about the Senior Bowl. We've got two segments to talk about that. Senior Bowl over the weekend out in Mobile with a fantastic end. A couple of really good stories there, but you know, the outcome of the game is obviously not the story. It is the individual player and evaluations, how they do in practice with good versus good. You know, the Senior Bowl is one of the more important evaluative pieces of the NFL draft because of all the game tape that you look at. It's often against uneven competition. Because you play other teams in college football, many of players who are not NFL talent. And so at the Senior Bowl, you get some of the best of the best, and you get to go against them, and this is what you get. So the offensive side of the ball, for you, I mean, there was a quarterback that kind of stood out. There was a couple of running backs, and then there were some offensive linemen. But would you say that based on the buzz that you're hearing from anyone who follows, was in Mobile, talks about the draft, would you say that probably the offensive player that did himself the most good was offensive lineman Gray Zabel?
Yeah, I think there's two offensive linemen that really stood out. Obviously, you mentioned Zabel, the North Dakota State offensive lineman, and they've been producing really talented offensive linemen, NFL, that can contribute in the NFL. So even though they're, you know, a FCS school, is that still what they're called? Division?
They play in the playoffs. So.
Yeah. Well, now there's playoffs everywhere, right? But yeah, that's, I mean, right. And he's a guy that can play anywhere on the interior, and it seems like immediately. But the interesting thing is he played left and right tackle for the Bison the last 2 years. So he's literally can do anything. He looks talented. He was a big, big winner, a name that like popped up a lot. And At first, I thought people were joking just because I know the background of this player. But, you know, it seems like that he really did himself well. And I still don't see him getting drafted. But Willie Lampkin the North Carolina center, he moves. And obviously, this is an insanely lofty comparison, and we'll have to see testing numbers and things like that. But from a size perspective, just size, and I know this guy's a little bigger, but Lampkin, who's listed at 5'10", or came in at 5'10 and 270 pounds.
Oh, geez.
The way he moves and the way he wins with leverage and quickness is a lot like Jason Kelce was back in the day. Now, again, that's insanely high comparison. Not saying he'll ever get there, but it's crazy to see him play that well, because like you said, this was the first chance where you saw, you know, what, 85% of the reps he was taking be against draftable players, as opposed to, you know, maybe 40% of them. And so for him to end up having a big week was honestly, and I don't mean to slight him in the least, it was shocking, because it's just so unusual for a center to be that undersized, hold his own.
The quarterback, and this is not for the Cardinals, obviously, although some of you fans would like to see the Cardinals move on from Kyler Murray. The quarterback play, like, from what I heard from people and listened on some draft podcasts, is that Jalen Milroe is, no one knows. So there'll be people who like him. There'll be people that don't think he can do. But, you know, he's kind of got Anthony Richardson traits, right? Just, you know.
Yeah, not quite as big, but.
Yeah, but like the type, like the arm talent, the movement, but not quite the size. But and in terms of the quarterback, is that, and I bring it up for the Cardinals, because if this is a guy, because of how we see the quarterbacks go up, like if your team needs a quarterback, last year we saw four quarterbacks picked in the first, what, 12 picks. And two of them, you're like, what in the world? Because Michael Penix and Bo Nix, like no, and there were five quarterbacks. You had J.J. McCarthy to the mix. And so some of those guys we were talking about, oh, a second round pick would make normal, but quarterbacks get pushed up the board because of need. And so we know Shedeur Sanders, we know Cam Ward are going to go in the top five probably. Quarterback three. And this is a guy that seemed to be the most consistent and the most skilled of the group, from what I have read and seen. I was at a Mobile. I didn't see the practices. Jackson Dart. Do you think that he's going to get enough hype to move into the top 15? And why do I say that? Because the Cardinals pick number 16.
No, I think he'll still be a day two guy, but I mean, who knows? Like, people do crazy things in that.
Like they always say, draft. It only takes one team. It right. only takes one team.
And he's better than Kenny Pickett, and Kenny Pickett will win the first round. So, you know, you can't really say anything anymore, because that's just how the draft works. But yeah, I mean, I thought overall, you know, the quarterbacks were underwhelming, but that's kind of the sense of this class. Cam Ward and Kadur were at the Shrine Bowl, didn't do anything, just kind of hung out, threw a little bit, talked a lot of trash to each other, had a good time, basically, right? Like, so,
yeah.
You know, this quarterback class, I think it's a good one to not need one, but there are some intriguing guys, even you know, a local guy, Tyler Shook, who's been around the block, I think he finished, well, I shouldn't say I know he finished at Louisville, but I think between there, he was at Texas Tech. I want to say he was at Oregon for a little bit. He played against Brock Purdy in high school, so that's how long he's been around. You know, 7 years in college, three at Oregon, three at Texas Tech, one at Louisville. He had a good week. He's a big pocket passer. But yeah, I mean, there's really, not the class to need it. The funny thing is, and I know we'll get to this, the funny thing is the positions of need for the Cardinals are very strong in this draft. And
yes.
And so it's one of those years where being in the middle of rounds actually isn't the biggest deal, because you should be able to get guys that fit at every level.
The one receiver name that kind of intrigued me, and it was more about what he did. Well, one was because of the game, and one was because of practice. Utah State, Jalen Royal. And then you've got Jack Becks out of TCU, the guy that, you know, had the 6 catches, 68 yards, and the touchdown. His brother had died in the New Orleans terrorist attacks, and he scored the game-winning touchdown on the last play of the game. Really cool story. But Royals is a guy that I'm intrigued in because he offers – I don't know what he's going to test at, but his skill set is down the field – can make plays down the field, which is something the Cardinals need badly. Something that is more than just like the Michael. Now, granted, we know that Marv is incredibly athletic, but he's the guy that's going to create separation and add a different dimension to what the Cardinals do with their receivers.
Yeah, and I think that's a good one. I do like him. You know, you mentioned Beck. I don't know. I mean, obviously, from a game style standpoint, he does things differently. You know, he's kind of more of a Puka Nacua.
Former tight end.
Right. He's more like a Puka Nacua type, right? Like he's an intermediate guy that wins with great routes and you know, strength. But like you said, they kind of need something that varies in terms of being able to get deep, you know, and Royals was one of the guys that showed that overall. You know, it's an interesting group from the Senior Bowl. It's not my favorite class of wide receivers. I'll say that.
It's definitely not what we've seen in the past couple of years. It's more of a different taste, different flavors of receivers.
I think that's a great
Then one of the guys that I don't know if he stood out in the Senior Bowl per se, but a guy that's viewed underrated by I've been listening to Mel Kiper and Field Yates. Yates really likes Xavier Restrepo. Yeah. He's not oversized, but if you're thinking of someone who would be a better slot option than Greg Dortch, he is undersized, but what he is very strong.
Yeah.
Dortch, who is very small, does not like he can get jammed. Restrepo is incredibly physical and can give you now they moved kind of away from that because they used Marv and they used Michael Wilson in the slot more late in the season. And I think they kind of like how that direction is going, but I guess it depends on the other receiver they have. Because if they bring a guy back, like say Jones, they can put Jones in the X. And then use Marv inside in the slot, or use Michael Wilson in the slot. But if you're going to go with a guy like Greg Dortch, Restrepo adds an extra dimension because he's a better playmaker. He offers the same sort of movement skills, but also very strong and very physical.
Yeah, the other one that I liked was Jalen Noel. So Jalen... lots of Jalen's. This one, Noel from Iowa State. He's a slot guy. He put up massive numbers in his final year at Iowa State. You know, he looks the part of that shifty slot guy, but as you said, bigger. So, you know, Noel came in at, I think they listed him at 5'11", about 200 pounds. He had 1,200 yards and 8 touchdowns on 80 catches last year. Like he looks the part. He played the part. You know, he wins in a variety of ways. That day three type of guy, I don't think that's a bad fit.
And then there was the RJ Harvey looked good. Not that the Cardinals don't need a running back, but could you get a guy that could replace DJ Dallas? Could you get a guy that could replace Amari DiMercato? Absolutely. RJ Harvey, who does a little bit of everything, showed off his former quarterbacking skills. He played quarterback in high school. An interesting guy who has a little of the all around. So was there anyone else on the offensive side of the ball that was of note
I mean, they probably won't draft one, but I thought the tight ends, especially Arroyo, looked really good. Elijah, yes. Arroyo, you know, but
it's a really good tight end class too.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. But overall, the tight ends were like such a strong point of this entire Senior Bowl. Like it's hard to you know, not like them, but I mean, this tight end room is so good. You're just kind of like, where do they fit, right? So, yeah. I mean, overall, I thought this was an interesting group. Not the best group I've seen, but there's some, like you said, there's a lot of good pick your flavor type of thing.
Let's look at the defensive side of the ball. Coming up next in the Rise of Sierra podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's look at some of the defensive prospects that, and this will be the more interesting one for the Cardinals. That's coming up next in Rise of Sierra. Back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web, talking Senior Bowl standouts now on the defensive side of the ball. Wouldn't you say, I for me, he's now the most exciting name that the Cardinals could possibly select at number 16. And that's Mike Green out of Marshall, who was incredible. It had 17 and a half sacks this last year, absolutely dominated games. And then you saw some of the one-on-ones during the week of the Senior Bowl, and he 100% looks like he could be a force at the next level.
Yeah. And he's an intriguing guy, right? I mean, you look at what he did. He was a monster, probably the monsters or the monster of monsters over the week, right? I mean, he kind of set everybody abuzz. His play at Marshall the last 2 years has been elite, like elite. And that's always what the concern becomes, is when you talk about a guy that played at Marshall. You know, the thing that you're going to have to look at is obviously the Khalil Mack comparisons, but let's be honest, he's not Khalil Mack's size. Last year, he didn't have the production that we saw this year. And that's where always, and understandably, and this is something that I've always preached, you look at the production, and when you have that massive one-year jump, it does make you wonder. You know, he went from 4.5 sacks in 23 to 17 sacks this year. But, man, he looked utterly dominant over the course of the Senior Bowl week. Like, he was the alpha among alphas, and, you know, obviously something that the Cardinals desperately need.
Like, if there's at the edge, they've got Steady Eddie and Zaven Collins, does a little bit of everything. If they bring back Baron Browning, maybe he can become something. B.J. Ojulari, but production. But Mike Green would be the, like, that scary guy on the edge. Like, the guy that would put fear into offenses once he develops. It's rookies. Rookies, like, great years for rookies. There's, like, 6-7 sacks. Or like, Jared Verse. What did he have, 4.5 sacks this year? And you're talking about how great a year he has, and then you look at all the other rookie pass rushers, they're like at 4.5 sacks. And so you might not get huge sack production, but he'll be the type of player that causes problems. You know, not on the same level, like not the same talent as, say, a Will Anderson, but the same type of vibe, I guess, if you, in the same type of fear without being like an absolute blue chip.
Yeah, and that would be a great, you know, that would be a great addition to what this team needs.
Defensive linemen stood out too, and I think this is the case, is this defensive line class is very, very deep.
What's your PTSD on Walter Nolan?
Oh man, he's just. I don't know.
So for, like, those that don't know, Walter Nolan was the number one overall recruit in the class of 2022, and he played at Ole Miss. So very similar kind of,
like, Rob McKendie,
yeah, background and you know, the one thing I will say is he started at Texas A&M, transferred over to Ole Miss, had 6.5 sacks, was an All-American this year. Kim Dichie never did that. So Kim Dichie never lived up to the hype. And I think that's something that we can agree on and look at and kind of talk about. But it's mid-first round type of guy. He looks the part. He was pretty dominant over the course of the week and would, again, be an immediate guy that probably a rotational guy in year one. You know, we've had the interior defensive line conversations. Those guys are a three-year, you know, project typically. And that's okay because he would give them some great depth and great rotational play. But I know it's going to be one of those things where people go, oh, is this the second?
the helmet comp.
Yeah.
And the Cardinals have really bad, they really do. They've had for the last 20 years really bad luck with first round off defensive linemen.
He's kind of the consensus number two guy right now after Mason Graham, who they probably will not get a chance to draft.
The
monster
not.
Out of Michigan. But, you know, for the most part, this was a fun group. You saw some good things.
Alexander, Shamar Stewart.
Yeah, that was that was the name I wanted to bring up, was Darius Alexander. Because, again, for Alexander, and for those that aren't familiar with Alexander, he played at Toledo. So not Tulane, but Toledo. But he had this, like, steady three-year improvement at Toledo. And then this week he really kind of showed out, right? Like, I think everybody was really impressed with how he played this week, the way he kind of held his own in a different way from Ricky Lampkin, right? Because when guys like from Toledo show up to this event, it's I got to show what I can do. The last 3 years have been that steady improvement, 1.5 sacks, 4 sacks, 3.5 sacks, but 8 tackles for loss this year. Interception return for a touchdown is always fun, right? But he gives them something different, 6'4", 320. And again, he just looked the part at the Senior Bowl, something you like to see in those situations.
Yeah, well, and doesn't it kind of give you a defensive line feel for what Quinyon Mitchell did at the Senior Bowl last year, also out of Toledo. It's kind of how he kind of, between that and the combine, he showed up and you're like, oh, this guy could be good. And he was good. Shamar Student he practiced Wednesday, but he did really, really well, really well. There are a couple of names, and here's, do you think the Cardinals would go defensive line in the first round?
So here's the thing. My ideal draft right now, and it's tough to sell this, but my ideal draft right now would be the Cardinals taking Mike Green in the first round, even though, again, small school, I understand the hesitation, Mike Green. And then coming back, and I don't know if he would be there. I would love to get Kenneth Grant, the other Michigan defensive lineman. Phenomenal. But the guy I'm really, really eyeballing in round two would be TJ Sanders, who had a really, really good week at the Senior Bowl as well. Another interior defensive lineman from South Carolina. A guy that improved each year of his 3 years. The one knock I would say, and it's not as much of a knock anymore because we've seen Braden Fist, Jared Verse, those guys not have issues. We'll see where they land in terms of longevity, but, you know, he's only a 4-year guy where some of these other guys are 5-6 year guys, right? But Sanders is a guy that played really well at South Carolina, had a great career in the SEC. you know, if you could really soup up that defensive line, then come back it on day or in round three and add a guy, you know, that we talked about on the offensive line or things of that nature, I think that would be an ideal way to kind of fix, and that's a strong word. I don't mean it necessarily in the negative connotation it comes across as, but fix kind of what the Cardinals need to fix to get to where they need to be.
Anybody else of note we should look at?
You mentioned just in general, man, how good this defense looked. I really did enjoy watching the defenders this week. I just thought that they were just a little more aggressive and overall. You know, I'm interested to see the linebackers and what they do at linebacker. Like, is that going to be something that they pursue? You know, having, it sounds like, it looks like they're going to move on from Kaiser White, right? So how does that work out? And what will they be looking for? You know, are they going to be looking for a guy that can do a little of both? Or are they going to be looking more for a coverage linebacker to pair with the excellent Mack Wilson? You know, is a guy like Jack Kaiser, who's been around the block for Notre Dame for it seems like forever, you know, a guy.
What about Jamar James?
Okay, that's what I figured. That's what you meant.
Fast, yeah. fast. Moves really well.
Yeah,
he's not oversized, but also like he's not long, but he gives you the athleticism
that they desperately
really
need
instinctive.
The position.
Yes, well,
and again, this is I don't want, you know, again, we'll find out how this all works out, but he's a third year guy, right? So he's a true class of 22 linebacker. Or class of 24 linebacker came in 22. The last 2 years at Florida, he's flown around. He's athletic. He's good size. Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that you would think would be kind of an ideal fit next to Mack Wilson. And again, we've seen that it doesn't have to be a game or a guy that you take on day one, right? This can be a guy that they can get in round three. Here's yes. my question. Here's my bigger question for you. How would you feel if they went defense all day one and two? Like, would that upset you, or would you be like, oh, I understand it?
I mean, I think it comes down to, like, as of right now, you have to look at what they're doing free agency.
Right, and it's just so far out.
Guard right now is, like, that's yelling at me. But, yeah, I wouldn't mind. The only position that I would say, two positions, obviously one, I don't think they need to go, like, they got a Clayton Tune. They don't need to draft a quarterback. They if they're going to bring a quarterback in, it should be someone to compete who's established. But if they use a day one or a day two pick, or if they went cornerback in either of the first two rounds, I think that would be, unless he's just an absolute stud, I wouldn't be thrilled about that because of what they've already committed to the position.
Like, is the Zabel kid, is 16 too early for you for him? Because, like, he's getting mocked at the end of the first round, so we know how that'll change up as the...
I wouldn't hate it, but you'd also have to look at what have they done for the pass rush already. And like, right. In my mind, I mean, this is kind of how I did my mock draft. Like, go get a guy like Mike Green or one of those edge guys, the kid out of, I can't remember the names now, Michael Williams, isn't that what it is?
Oh, Michael Williams. Yeah.
Michael Williams. Yeah. Those guys, there's a bunch of those right in there. And then a guy like a Donovan Jackson in round two.
Yeah. And I think that would be good. I mean, I like the big guys out of A&M too. Shamar Stewart, Nick Scruton,
yes.
You know, both guys that are a little like more Darius Robinson esque size wise, but could give you something. I know the kid out of Boston College had a good week. Donovan Izuruka. Donovan Izuruka. He had a good week, you know, and he's a guy that is intriguing 6'2", 250. So yeah, there's just so much that makes sense for, and like I said, the interior, the front four defensive guys that they need and the offensive line guys that they need, it's like lining up perfectly, like for them to take a, you know, like you said, like a Mike Williams, or sorry, Mike Green, you know, at 16, and then come back and take a Donovan Jackson at wherever their second round pick is. I don't remember.
Grab either a D tackle or a linebacker in round three, and then get right. The other of those two positions in round four. Like if that would line up perfectly, especially with how deep this defensive tackle class is, like you could probably get, and I'm not saying that you don't want to count on these guys, but they're top four, especially their projected starters as of right now for the defensive line. You feel pretty confident. Justin Jones, Bilal Nichols, Darius Robinson, you got Dante Stills. Those are guys you feel good about. You feel good about those guys going into next year. And so you don't need to, unless it's someone that knocks your socks off. So, you know, Kenneth Grant won't be one of those guys in rounds one or two. You could go that route, or you could hit that defensive tackle position later in the draft, because what does it go like 30 players deep that you could be confident? You know, some are saying 30 plus draftable guys on the defensive line and at running back. And the Cardinals don't really have a need at running back, which means they can pick up on probably an undrafted rookie that could contribute this year if they wanted to.
And there are a couple names we didn't even really like mention that had good weeks that are projected as like day three guys. I always want to say day four, and I know that's not a thing, but you know, round four type of guys, obviously, but you know, day three guys that we didn't even mention. I mean, the kid out of Maryland, Jordan Phillips, right? Like he had a good week.
Jordan Phillips, the young Jordan Phillips. I was gonna say, tackle.
I know people will be like, no, can't do that again, right? But different guy, right? You know, Omar Norman Lott had a nice week. He's a guy that's projected to go on day three, you know, and we're talking deep and on day three. So that's the thing, is there's these guys that are, you know, this is the year to really load up and improve what has been a weakness. And there's no other way to put it, right?
It'll be interesting to see how things go. We've got the combine coming up in a couple of weeks, Super Bowl this week, and I think that will wrap up this edition of the show, the number episode 638 of the Rise Up Spirit podcast. We talked coaching losses and gains. We talked about offensive prospects and defensive prospects that stood out at the Senior Bowl. Seth and I'll be back later in the week, as we will have more to talk about. So we'll probably complain about, shake our fists at the sky for a couple of mock drafts. Maybe there's some other Cardinals movement in anything. And then we'll look at the Super Bowl. Chiefs, Eagles, picks, predictions. And, you know, if you want to win some money or risk some money, we'll have some picks for you. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise of Spirit podcast. We'll be back again in a couple of days. We'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Spirit podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.